Welcome to the Agricultural Economics Podcast. This is your host, Jessica Eyes, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Ken Foster, who's head of the department here. How are you, Ken?
I'm doing great, Jessica. We got it just 2 weeks from today. We're going to kick off the fall semester of 2015.
Whoa, I'm sorry. It's
just
a week,
2 weeks.
It's a week and 6 days.
Oh, that's right. Today's Tuesday. Yeah. I lost a day, but I'm not teaching this fall, so it's okay for me to lose a day.
On the contrary, I am.
Okay, sorry. A week and 6 days to be precise before the new semester begins. And, you know, a few students are trickling in. I heard a graduate student in the hallway surprisingly say that after being at Purdue for 4 years, the undergraduates look so much younger.
Shocking how that happens.
Yeah, and I was just like, you have no idea how young they can look. Just give it time.
Yeah, they do look younger every year.
I think they're coming straight out of preschool.
Sometimes I suspect that. And which actually, very apropos, Ken, this brings us to the topic of one of our core missions here in agricultural economics, which is taking these students who get younger every single year and educating them. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly right. This is a department, just to be serious for a minute, this department has a very long history of taking students very seriously. And, you know, you don't have to talk very long to some of our alumni to hear them talk about the influence that professors had on their lives, not just in terms of what they did in the classroom, but the interest they took in the students outside the classroom. And, you know, and some of these were important people. Some of these were people like Don Parlberg, who served in Washington, D.C. in the Eisenhower administration in the Department of Agriculture, but still felt that students were the most important thing that he did.
It's amazing because to this day, I remember so clearly the undergraduate professors who had such an impact on my life.
And I feel the same way. So some of these professors that preceded our guest through the classroom were my professors when I was a student here. And absolutely, they influence you in ways that you don't realize it at the time. But then when you become a professor, you suddenly wake up one day in the classroom while you're talking to your students and you realize what you were just saying to them was exactly what Professor so-and-so said to you, you know, 10 or 15 years ago. And it's pretty amazing to see those kinds of things happen.
10, legacy, 15, maybe 20,
maybe
10,
even 30
maybe
or 40. Let's not date anybody. I was thinking early in my career, I was saying these things, not yesterday, but you know, yeah.
Well, that's very very appropriate for our guest today. It was one of our most outstanding teachers here in the department. He's a professor, but he really takes the time to invest in our mission of education. And we are so pleased to welcome Dr. Larry DeBoer. How are you?
No, I'm doing fine, Jessica. Ken, thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure.
Yeah, thanks for being here. Yeah. So Larry, this year was an exciting year for you in terms of teaching. A couple of things happened. Do you want to tell us a little bit about them, or shall we tell about them?
You're probably referring to these awards I won.
I am.
I was recipient of the Coles Award, which goes to an outstanding teacher in the College of Agriculture. And the Coles Award makes you eligible for the Murphy Award, which is an outstanding teacher at Purdue University. And I won that one, too.
And you got that one, too? Yeah. Murphy Award is the pinnacle, I think, at Purdue for an undergraduate teacher, without a doubt.
It was amazing. They surprised me in the classroom.
Is such a good story.
They walked in. Well, I had seen that morning that somebody else had won the Murphy Award, and I thought, well, okay, so I didn't win the Murphy Award. That's all right. And I had forgotten that they give out four or five of these every year. And so here I am teaching away, and I just finished, in fact, singing Buddy, Can You Spare a Dime? Because yeah, I was doing the Great Depression, and that puts people in a nice depressed mood for the Great Depression. And in walk about five people with balloons and a sign and a microphone and a camera, and began to set on to talk to me for about 15 minutes on camera about the Murphy Award and teaching, and then they went out into the among the students and asked if anybody had anything to say, and a couple of them did, fortunately. nice things, in fact.
I could have been awkward.
Yeah, and eventually they turned that into a little film, which they showed during the awards ceremony later on. So it was pretty spectacular. And then I got back to my office, and my office door was decorated with balloons and a sign and stars and things like that. So I left that up for quite some time, in fact.
And I guess that's a pretty big deal because, you know, in the College of Agriculture, we are not a particularly demonstrative group of people. I would say we're rather reserved.
We are.
Except at Halloween, there was a gorilla running the halls.
Yeah, some gorilla in tennis shoes or something, I think.
It was a very, very skinny Santa Claus at our Christmas party.
You go out to some of the extension meetings with Chris Hurd or Alan Gray or someone like that. You'll see some demonstrative demonstrating. I get that way, too. So.
Well, I suspect that they're, and maybe, Larry, you can verify this or not, but I suspect that there is some personality transformation that takes place when we walk into the classroom. In general, we're professors and we think that people expect us to be serious people and, you know, and take what we say seriously. But we walk in the classroom and we realize maybe we're dealing with a different audience there. And what do you think?
Well, I do think so. I've often, when actors say that they are shy in real life or reserved in real life, but when they get up on stage, they have permission to speak and they have words to say. And I've often thought that professors might be like that. And you know, I teach a big class. Usually enrollment is more than 200 in one of the big barn rooms on campus. And they are freshmen and sophomores, and they are reluctant to be in my class. It's an introductory macroeconomics class, and it's a bubble sheet checkoff for an awful lot of majors. And so I figure I gotta be big, and so I wave my arms and I talk loud, and then I just can't get naturally excited about what I'm saying. Because it is exciting, I think. This is, you know, my class is right out of the headlines. And I often tell them, you know, I'm going to have you read, probably 10 or 20 newspaper articles here, but I can't tell you which ones because most of them haven't been written yet. During the semester, when I need an article about the Federal Reserve, I will call up the Washington Post, the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal website, and there will be an article about the Federal Reserve, and I'll have you read that. So it really is a cutting edge in the news sort of course, and I try to use that to get them excited about it too, and maybe it probably works for some of them.
Yeah, how many times do you meet somebody new and they ask you what you do and you tell them, oh, I'm an economics professor, and their face just goes like, bleh. And they make some shame, well, I didn't really like economics that much when I was a student. And you're like, that's because you didn't have a great professor like Larry DeBoer to make it interesting and exciting. And
yeah, sometimes people do say, you know, you're the most interesting economist I've ever met.
I was like, is that
kind of a low bar?
Yeah, I was like, is that a compliment? Larry, how many years have you been teaching for?
Let's see. I've been at Purdue for 31 years now. I started teaching a couple of years in. I taught at a couple of years at Ball State before that, so I'd say about 30 years.
Do you remember the first class you taught?
Well, in grad school, I sure do. I remember my face was sore at the end because I smiled during the whole thing. And it was pretty nerve-wracking to get up in front of people and talk. And, you know, a lot of folks, there are surveys out there that say, you know, people's greatest fears are, number one, public speaking, number two, death. And that's not, I can see that, you know, but it turned out I had, coming from somewhere, and I've never figured out where, that I had an ability to do that, and that's kind of the foundation of what I've been able to accomplish.
Well, I wanted to launch on this because a lot of professors, a lot of faculty, you know, they're driven by different things, and some people are particularly driven by their research. Some people, you know, that find their passion in teaching. How did you find this passion for educating? Where did your motivation come from?
Well, you know, standing up in front of the class, it became a kind of performance, I think. You know, and as especially as PowerPoint became available and you could start piping in sound and music and you could really put together a kind of performance piece with every lecture. I remember early on trying to figure out what kind of lectures I wanted to give. I thought, let's make each little lecture a small research project. But that kind of evolved into let's make each lecture a theatrical performance even, right? And I think that's part of where all these awards come from is just the ability to engage people's attention with enthusiasm. Also organization, right? Because when you lay something out like that in advance, you got to know what you're going to be doing every minute of the of the lecture. So if I fall 10 minutes behind in my course, I figure I'm not doing very well. And I can remember professors when I was in school would fall weeks behind the syllabus. Yes, well, that does not happen to me because of the organization that has to be applied to make this work.
What's been your hardest moment teaching?
All right, so we got the lectures, right? From 1986, when I started with my AggieCon 217 class, until 2012, every single class was a lecture class. But around here at Purdue, we're beginning to think, you know, lectures are not the most efficient way of communicating information. So I went into this IMPACT program that we have here at Purdue, where they make you think about what you're trying to accomplish in class. You know, 27 years later, I'm starting to think about what I'm trying to accomplish, which is, I suppose, not the way it ought to be, but okay. And the thing that really caught my attention was they said, don't ask what you want your students to know at the end of the class. Ask yourself, what do you want them to be able to do? And that really changes everything, because when I started to think about my class, what do I want them to be able to do? Take the model, take what they learn about the data, take what they learn about policy history, and apply it to the news that comes at them day by day. Apply it to the extent that that's possible, to their own experiences. Apply, right? And not memorize, not understand, apply. And that means giving them practice, applying. And so it came, it was fall of 2013. I said, all right, today we're going to do a group project in class. And I assigned them to groups, and I printed up the project, and I set it out there, and then I stood back and gave up control of the class.
Oh, wow.
And that, recently at any rate, is the scariest moment. I mean, what if they just stare at me?
Yes.
What if they won't talk to each other? What if they get up and walk out? What if they say, what, you're not going to teach us? But they didn't do any of that, right? It worked. They started talking to each other. They started working on the assignment, and there you are. And so I'm going to do more. In fact, I've been moving towards doing more of that sort of interactive stuff, engaging stuff, tossing it to the students every now and then, asking a question, setting up a situation where they have to talk to each other, or they have to think about something, or they have to figure something out. In some classes, then taking it back and then working with the students, in a sense, to develop a story about whatever it is we're talking about. And I've been, when you do just lectures, clearly last semester's lectures are going to be similar to this semester's lectures, and of course with macroeconomics, it develops. So back in 1986, the Reagan tax cuts were news, and now they are history. And so we've had to add more stuff, of course, and so that keeps it fresh. But it can get a little stale, and I've been I'm so grateful that I did that IMPACT program, and I've been very engaged in what I'm doing in the classroom the last couple of years.
Any advice for a new young professor just getting started, Larry, in teaching at the university level?
My ideas about this have evolved. I used to think, really, what can the students expect? They should expect knowledge of the subject matter, but that goes without saying. Organization, right? Don't fall behind your syllabus and do what your syllabus says. And enthusiasm, which also shouldn't be too hard, because surely what you're teaching is what you have a passion for learning, research, teaching. Well, that's not always true. Or maybe teaching itself is not true. But those three things, I think, are what you're responsible for. But I guess the other thing is basically just put yourself out there. And don't be scared. And the students are, most of them, even the reluctant ones in great big survey courses like I teach, Most of them are there and will respond if they can see that you care about what's going on and you care about them learning. And so I guess I would say take some chances. Don't be scared. And find that enthusiasm that you have, that you know you have for your topic, and communicate it to them.
Well, thank you so much, Larry. Did you have any last questions, Ken?
No, that's it. Yeah. I think that's great. Yeah.
I did have one thing to say about the age thing. Mm-hmm. These last two semesters, a situation I've been dreading for years occurred. Someone came up to me during the semester and said, "My dad had you in class."
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Oh,
30 years later. So,
dun.
At least your dad didn't say, "Well, don't take that guy." So that was good news, I guess. That's how long I've been at this.
I assume that you told this student, "Well, you know, I've revamped the class since then, so his notes aren't going to help you."
I could say that. Usually I'm too stunned. No, usually what I do is say, "Oh, let's take a selfie together."
Very nice. I like it. Perfect approach.
Larry, I just can't thank you and all the other faculty in our department who really care about teaching enough, because I loved my college education and I loved it because of the few teachers that I knew cared. And students can just feel that in the classroom, and it just makes such a huge difference. And I hope we have a generation of future professors in front of us who still really care about that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Larry, thanks for carrying on the legacy of all of
you.
Great people in this department.
Yeah. All right. You've been listening to the Purdue Agricultural Economics Podcast with Jessica Eyes and Ken Foster. Go ahead and you can check us out on our website. Ken is going to tell you.
Oh, at www.agecon.purdue.edu.
He's really good at his job there. And you can also like us on Facebook. And you can also follow us on Twitter. Thank you.